Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. I'm extremely excited about this next guest because he's pretty close to where I live, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You don't meet too many people putting books out, starting businesses in Pittsburgh, in my hometown. So this is going to be a fun one. And if you're out there and you're looking to write a book, check out dreamstarterspublishing.com. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you have a book, you want to put it on autopilot to generate some leads, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. The individual that I'm about to speak to in a moment here wrote a book, and it is all about unlocking the keys to the vault. The keys to the vault: how to achieve wealth, unlock potential, and attract other people's money. And Dan Costantino is here. And the way I met this guy, you would think is like at a mastermind or an event in Pittsburgh. Well, I actually had to travel all the way to Texas to go to a mastermind. Sitting there in the stands, I screamed out where I was from, and he looked back and he's like, "Wait a second, you're from Pittsburgh?" "I'm from Pittsburgh." And I thought he was bullshitting me. I'm like, "There's no way you're from Pittsburgh." So we hit it off, and not too long after that, he put out this book. So it is an honor to have you here, Dan.
I appreciate it, Mike. It's it's funny. That was Apex, and then we met each other again at Legacy. So It's weird how our paths have crossed. I'm not sure we've ever seen each other in Pittsburgh.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, we've never really met in Pittsburgh, just at these mastermind events. That's why they're so important to go to, right?
It's huge, man. It's literally changed my life. I mean, I'm 45 years old. I'll be 46 this year. And the amount of growth that I've had in the past 5 years since I've joined masterminds has been, it's indescribable. And quite frankly, most people wouldn't understand it. And you get all the weird comments from people that don't go through the self-development journey. And it is a journey. Everything changes. You know, I'm different now than I was 5 years ago. That has been a key to a vault for sure, because just being around not just like-minded individuals, but people that are doing better than you, that's the only way you're really going to increase your potential. You know, you may believe in yourself, but until you see someone do it, sometimes it's hard to really accomplish those goals, or even think big enough to set those goals that scare you a bit.
Well, the first event that I ever went to was 10X Growth Con 2 in Vegas, and it just blew my mind. Like, not only the insight that I got from the people on stage, but all the people were there that seemed like, "Oh, you're an outsider like me. Oh, okay." Mm-hmm. Wait a second. We all think a certain way of wanting to achieve extreme wealth and freedom. Where I come from, that seems like abnormal. Okay, let me keep going to these events. And once you start to adopt their principles and maybe their belief patterns, that becomes second nature then.
Yep, absolutely. And I got to give a shout out to my personal trainer, Ron. He lives in your complex.
So, oh, no way. Run.
Yeah, absolutely. He went to St. Thomas last week, and he told me about the Burr strategy, which he's not a real estate guy. So it was pretty cool. He read the book down on vacation. And so it was pretty neat.
Well, you know, I hang around a lot of real estate guys like yourself, and I'm only in self-storage, but recently I'm at Bear Run apartment complex, and there was a transition from old owner to new owner.
Yes, and he told me about that.
Yeah. And so I was explaining to people at the pool what the new owners are doing, right? Because the old owners were like, "Oh, you have a pulse. Come on in, you know, come on mm-hmm. in, you know, to get into this, this apartment building. We don't really care as long as it's full," you know, like that type of thing. So it didn't make sense, because whenever I went in, it was 2020. It was a chaotic year. And, nowadays, it became way more difficult to get in here, probably because the old owners needed to get that occupancy rate up, right? Mm-hmm. So they could sell it to the new owners. And then the new owners are going to buy it. They're going to renovate it. They're going to do the appreciation, all that. So I was explaining to people at the pool, I'm like, "Do you see how there's a difference in how they're treating people and what they're doing within the property?" Because they have only a certain amount of time to renovate the rental units. That's why they have to like kick you out to fix the places and then bring you back in. But it's not their fault. It's the bank's restrictions. So I was educating people on the pool, even though I wasn't even in that world at all. I was like, "Oh yeah, my clients always talk about this." So anyways, I got to talk to Ron. I didn't know there's a guy named Ron who does your personal training, and he lives really close to me. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
I'll see him at the pool probably.
Great guy.
Well, let's get into the genesis of this book here. What made you want to write Keys to the Vault?
Honestly, it's the people that reach out to me that I don't have time to talk to. I get a ton of DMs. I get a ton of DMs from people that, you know, the two biggest things that newer real estate investors or people that want to do multiple deals at a time. So people that want to, you know, scale to a smaller degree. It's either they're having trouble finding deals or finding money. And I'll be honest, I have found deals just through social media and relationships and stuff like that. But I'm not the best at that. But I am pretty good at finding money and doing creative finance and all the different chapters that are in the book. So it was something that, you know, I just wanted to share with people and point to. You know, it certainly wasn't a money-making endeavor. It was really just trying to put some content out there that people could utilize to help them raise money for their real estate deals. And I've used most all of these strategies. I knew a couple that I don't use regularly, but I have used them sparingly. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways to access money. It's not as big a barrier as people think. That's more of a mental block, which I talk a lot about in the book.
Nice. So being a guy from Pittsburgh, what I noticed is that when I went to Duquesne University, most of my friends were going to, whether it's one of the big banks around your PNC, BNY Mellon, it was UPMC. And then there's also a couple law firms that are really big. So that seems like the common path for most people. What made you want to become an entrepreneur? Because I was sort of an anomaly, I guess, in my circle. So what was your path like going from, I guess, the corporate world to entrepreneurship?
I was in sales. You know, and sales is, in my opinion, one of the best qualities of life that you can have for a company. I love not knowing what my W-2 was going to be at the end of the year. I mostly had a good salary throughout my career. And I was in sales for 18 years. But I was always one of the top salespeople, and eventually you get a little bit cocky. I was pretty good. Always had, you know, some of the top sales numbers there. And when they mess with your money, you know, you get a chip on your shoulder. And, I was like, screw it. I'm going to get a side hustle. And I wanted to flip a couple houses a year and make an extra $100,000. That was like my stated goal. 11 years ago was just to make an extra $100,000, on top of what I was making. Cause I had a pretty good recurring revenue stream within, my sales job already. I was making, you know, a couple $100,000 a year. And really I had customers for years. Like I'm very good at building relationships. I believe strongly in relationships that has yielded me benefits throughout life and certainly in real estate. But, I have customers today I could call and probably, if I need to go back to the freight industry, I could probably get some freight pretty quickly because you always treat people right. And I think, you know, one of the biggest compliments that I got was from a guy in Texas that one of the young men that I've mentored, his boss wants to get into real estate. So he gave him my book. He read it and he said, it's not so much about finding money for real estate deals. It's about how to utilize these skills, but still be a very good person. You know, you can use these tips for raising money for bad things, right? You can swindle people out of their retirement and stuff like that just by not doing the right thing, right? Not being honest and forthgoing and not being a good human. So I throughout the book, I try to hit home and say, this is how you protect the lender or the person giving you the money. And that's one of the biggest things that I want to, instill in anyone who reads the book is, yes, you can raise money, but you've got to protect the money. That's the number one thing, is to get an investor or a partner's money back safely.
Got it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very much like Edward Bernays' book. He's the father of propaganda. There are so many things that you can learn from him and use it for bad or good. And so whether it's marketing or sales, certain skill sets transcend just business. And you just got to, you know, go through this pathway of entrepreneurship without losing yourself in the process. I guess that's the
100%. I've had multiple people. I mean, the business game and entrepreneurship is tough, man. You have to have a level of trust to grow, right? Yeah. You can't do it all yourself. All right. You can't, or you're just trading time for money. You might as well just go work for someone. But I've seen people get get had hundreds of thousands of dollars stolen. And one person recently had over $800,000 stolen by a partner.
Yep.
So yeah, man, it's real deal. Like, there's risk out here, and you know, I'm trying to educate people and make sure that they protect themselves, because you can make all the money in the world, but the only way you really grow is to not lose money. And you've got to be very protective. And so you do have to put some trust out there, but also you have to protect yourself and underwrite things. And the only way to do that successfully is to pack your brain with knowledge and talk to people that are doing it. Because here's the reality, like, I can have a deal that needs funded for $250,000. I can put out an email to my investor list and I can get that funded within minutes. There's power in that. That's awesome. I'm excited about that. But not everyone is responsible enough to handle that responsibility. And so, you know, I wish I could pick who buys the book. I only want good people to raise money from people. Cause like I said, there's people out there. And just a quick story, I mean, there's someone in a similar mastermind that took a few hundred thousand from two very good friends of mine. And what they were doing was, they were giving them notarized mortgages. It looked like it was all legit. He never recorded those mortgages. So yes, that piece of paper was notarized. It looked official, but he didn't record it with the county. And he did that 20 times and raised, you know, basically like $2 million on one property, and none of those people got their money back. So that stuff's real. And that's why you need to educate yourself on this whole process so that you can use it for good, not bad.
Yeah, man, it is scary, because I think that's the importance of going to these masterminds. You kind of see the landscape through other people's eyes, what they're hearing, you hear the rumbles, and you're just kind of at the forefront of either all the good or all the bad. And so
Most of it's excitement.
And absolutely. Yeah.
And listen, I've built a $50 million real estate portfolio with these strategies, right? So, and I've done it for good. And I could tell you that my first investors are still with me today from, you know, 10 years ago. And, you know, they'll wire me money without proper paperwork, you know, and then I'll get it to them later. So I want to make sure that, you know, I don't kill the vibe or anything like that. I want people to protect themselves. And that's as much of the aim of this book as anything. But you can do more things. If any entrepreneur is going to need cash to scale. I have a great friend that is one of my proudest accomplishments is in my life, really. I hired him on as an entry-level operator 20-some years ago. And he became, you know, he got into the C-suite, was making, you know, $700,000-$800,000. He is just starting his own company. But he's always been an employee. And one thing I was telling him is, when you're starting a company, you cannot have enough cash on hand because you're going to be, you know, you can be slowly.
It's air. Yeah,
it is air. And if you're growing, there's a big difference between profitable business on your P&L and having enough cash to match the growth, right? So you can be making a 20% margin every month, but if you're spending money and growing and hiring employees and having to front money, and you have vendors that don't have good terms for you, like, you can run out of cash real quick, even though your business is profitable. So, you know, some of these real estate strategies can be used in acquiring just regular businesses. I know I have a great friend out in Oregon that basically buys insurance agencies on owner financing, something that I go over in the book to acquire real estate. So a lot of these strategies can be used in real estate, but they can also be used in regular business as well.
So you said you started your business at 34, right? And you're 45 now. Give us some metrics. I think you gave us a few things to kind of highlight what you were able to accomplish in just 11 years. Can you just kind of go through that with us?
Sure. Yeah. So for the first 5 years, I call that my side hustle phase. I was a full-time sales executive, and I would go out, buy a couple houses a year, and I would look for contractors while I was out on the road. I was on the road every single day. So I'd go check on properties. I would go look at properties to buy.
Driving for dollars. Yeah, there you go.
Yep. And So I started falling in love with buying rentals. You know, I bought a couple rentals that just didn't work as flips, but they were good deals. So I'd buy them, and slowly but surely, I made my way up to 30 units in 5 years, which, you know, is a phenomenal number. I literally saw people that didn't work anymore with 30 properties. Yep. So that's a great number to have.
All single family.
No, there were some duplexes in there, okay. Mostly duplexes and single families. But at that point, you know, I just love the game so much. I love the deals. And I was starting to cheat on my passion, which was real estate, because I couldn't pay full attention to it, but I was also cheating on my job, right? And I didn't feel real great about that. So it was time for me to go all in. And I had lined myself up. I'm not stupid. You know, a lot of people will want to quit their job just because they love real estate, right? I had, number one, I had a pretty good amount of recurring revenue from my rentals that I could use to live, but also I had two killer flips, one in Robinson and one in Bellevue. Great markets. I knew I lined them up before I quit. I had those two under contract. So I knew I was going to make $100,000 just with those two flips if, wow, I did nothing else. So I made sure that I was set up well before I quit my W-2 job. Because I can tell you, even today, even with all this real estate, it was almost easier to get loans back when I had the W-2 job than it is now. And I make a lot more money. So
that's scary. You try to get a loan whenever you start a business. You're not going to get one easily. Do all that before. Very smart move.
Yeah. So you want to borrow the money when you don't need it, right? I tell everyone that. Don't quit and then think you're going to go find banks to fund your business. So anyway, I had 30 units, went all in, and very quickly, I think the next year I jumped to 54 units, then 80 units. And my goal was to get over 100 units. And I think May or June, I hit 112, somewhere in that range. And then I started working I was with the legacy guys. I started working on an apartment deal, a portfolio that was 305 units. So I went from 81 units to 417 units in 1 year. And that was in 2021. And then one of my employees lived at another apartment complex nearby in Beaver County and made friends with the property manager. And I got another 258 units. So that was just one property. That's where I'm at today. So we work out of here a few days a week. But I'm over 600 now. I don't know where I'm at, 620 or 630 units. I've sold some to remain liquid because, 2023 liquidity was very important for everyone. And again, because banks have tightened up and wouldn't do deals that they would have the year before. So I've sold some properties just to make sure that the liquidity is there to run the business, because we are in growth mode. So now we have over 600 units. We just recapitalized that 258 unit, and we bought it for $4.6 million. It appraised for $13 million last year. So our investors are very happy. And with our construction and the lease up, you know, we believe we can get this property over $20 million in value. So can't do that. You need a lot of single families to do that.
Unbelievable, man. What a wild couple of years. I remember sitting with you at the legacy event, Tim Broad's legacy event. And I remember you were working on this deal. Right? And that was it. You were just like wide-eyed, like, I need to know what I need to know for this property. And seems like, you know, they put you on the right track, you know, in the right rooms with the right people, and you're able to get it done. And obviously it snowballs, right? So whenever it comes to attracting other people's money, my assumption is, number one, you have to transform, but you have to show other people that you're transforming financially when it comes to, you know, making bigger moves. But the trust factor, I would think that maybe momentum is crucial to attracting other people's money. So give us a few pointers that you've learned that is crucial for anybody out there who's looking to get into real estate. They say they don't have any money. That really is an excuse, because you really do use other people's money if you are doing the sweat equity. So what would you say?
I think a couple things. I do think track record is everything. I do think it is important to have some skin in the game, right? So I know a lot of gurus will go around and say you don't need any money to do real estate. And I mean, yes, you can do some deals. And I'll give you this one. This one has the badge on it. The bestseller badge.
Oh yeah. I don't have it on this one. This one came, I get them on the day off. This did not. Yeah.
No, it's on
Amazon. You got the bestseller badge.
I love it. I love it. I don't even know where I was on that, but yeah. No money. You can do deals without money. You can't be real big in real estate without money. You know what I mean? You need some money. Even the deals where the seller's giving you the house and on just payments, someone needs to pay closing costs. And like, these people are giving you their house on payments. You're really going to make them pay the closing costs, right? So you need a few thousand for that. So, you know, we do hard money lending as well. So whenever borrowers come to me, I want to make sure that they have like 15,000 in the bank, at least 15,000 to 20,000. So you need some liquidity, but also you need knowledge. You need a power team. You need to know who's out there. You need to have your financial, if someone's going to give you money, if I'm giving anyone money, I want to know they have their financial house in order, right? So you need a personal financial statement. You need if you have properties, you need to have little like a debt schedule. You need to have your list of properties. I call it my achieved portfolio. It's just all of my properties. It has what the property appraised for, what I bought it for, what it's worth now, what the loan balance is, what the cash flow is. It literally has all of the statistics on that property. Anytime I go to the bank or a lender and they ask me for information, this one spreadsheet that I have has been built from requests from banks for over the last 11 years. So it literally has everything. I don't have to create a new sheet every time I go to a loan, go to a bank for a loan. I already have that information. So I can flip it to them in minutes and I keep that updated. So personal financial statement, a debt schedule with a lot more statistics for your properties is super important. And just a little blurb or summary of what your track record is, how many deals you've done, how you've performed and gotten your money back to your lenders or investors. That stuff will put you over and above the hacks out there that are just hustling real estate and doing one or two deals a year. That will put you in the top 10% for sure if you just have that stuff in order.
That's amazing. Just simple organization, being clear, concise. Also, I would assume, you know, the way you present yourself on social media has something to do with it. You know, you're a family man and you get to actually show, like, I think I watched a video, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, of you driving around, and I think you were in the freight yard of where your old location was with your daughter. Yeah. And I think showing behind the scenes of your life gets people to trust you more. So social media, is that a huge part of it? And representing how you are a family man. And this is really all about creating the generational wealth for the family, giving them the freedom. So I would say that's part of it, right?
Yeah, a couple things. Social media has been huge. I've raised millions of dollars off of social media. And it's not through ads or anything else like that. It's just showing that I'm a human, trying to add some free value out there. Again, I can't have a phone conversation with everyone that wants it. I wish I could, but I just don't have that time. I actually have a 26 employees, so it's busy every single day, even Saturdays and Sundays. So social media is huge. And share your successes, share a few of the bumps and bruises. Don't make that the focus. But social media is huge. Like, showing people what you're doing on a flip, people love watching that. They love seeing before and after pictures. And quite frankly, I don't do enough of it. You know, thankfully I have a team that gets filler content out there, and all the family stuff is the real stuff that I do. My daughter interned with me last year and she shot content for me. She'll be doing that again this summer. So awesome. I'm really excited about that. So we'll load up on content while I have her for a couple months. But it's been huge. Social media has absolutely been huge for my capital raising endeavors. And also, you mentioned the family stuff. Like, that is ultimately the most important thing. One of my very good friends that I met at Apex, he just sent me a little blurb that basically said, you know, if you're on your deathbed, you know, your kids aren't going to ask how much you have in your 401k. They're not going to ask how many apartments you have, all this stuff. So, you know, it hit me pretty good. I already know that, right? And I feel like I pay attention to my girls pretty well. But if I'm not with my girls, I'm work-minded. Like, that's all I can think about. But I took, you know, Stephanie to Mad Mex last night and it was just awesome. Every once in a while, you got to kick yourself to make sure that you understand really really what's important. So I do show that side of my life because that is ultimately why I'm doing it. And I know everybody says that that's their why, but it's very easy to keep your face in your phone. And I'm guilty of this as anybody else. And you could be sitting across from your daughter and completely ignore her. So, so it's a constant battle if you're a type A for sure.
Yeah, man. And that's what I do admire of you. I don't have any kids or anything, but you really do represent like a lot of what's important to you outside of real estate on social media, the family side and the personality really shines through. So that is awesome to see. And I mean, do you still have was it your dream car to have the Charger? You have a wicked Charger, is that right? Or Challenger?
Have a GT 500. My wife has a GT 350. So I've got 760 horsepower. I think she's at 520. And my truck's 700 horsepower.
That's what I see more than anything now is the truck, I believe.
Yeah, that's the daily driver, man. That thing's fun. It's stupid, but it's fun.
Well, I'm in self-storage. I think everybody should be in real estate to some degree. Obviously, mm-hmm. when you look at historical data, it's one of the only assets to continue to rise. Inflation is getting crazy right now. The dollar's dropping faster. Real estate, there's a lot going on in the commercial space. So right now, I always say real estate is a major part of who you are. I'm assuming you recommend it to everybody. I mean, you need to understand equity. In your book, you have a phrase, you can't eat equity. Equity's yes. a part of it. It's a part of the puzzle. It's not everything, but mm-hmm. my God, when you have some equity in something, you have a net worth and you can leverage that quite a bit. So real estate, you really do push that to people. Hey, get into it to some degree, but also mm-hmm. what are you doing right now with everything that's happening in the world?
Right now, I'm mainly focused on renovating our two big portfolios. We will create $10 million of value this year without buying anything, just because we bought, you know, portfolios that were heavy value add. They were vacant units, so we're getting them rented out right now. We have a very big goal. We've just set records 2 months in a row. So as we increase net operating income, we don't have to buy anything, and we have very good debt, you know, debt on those two projects. So that's our main focus. We are starting an RV park development with some partners. I'm a minority partner, but that's down in Texas. So we have gone through a long drawn out process on that, but construction begins in a couple weeks here. So I'm excited about that. I will be going on the hunt for new acquisitions. I would like to do that with some. I'm very good at raising money. I'm very good at, you know, building, being an operator. You know, we have we're vertically integrated. So we have our own construction company, project, property management company, all that. So why I love the big deals, the big commercial deals, is because the pie is big enough to share, right? So you go to these masterminds, there's people that are very good at acquisitions, or they're very good at whatever, construction, but they are terrible. You can't be good at everything. So what I'm looking for is someone that needs, you know, someone that can help them raise money or manage the properties. We can put property management in place. If they find deals, they bring us in. We're a great general partner. So that's what I'm looking for this year. But I will be going on the hunt myself to look for more properties. You know, we want to get over 1,000 units here by the end of next year. And we can do that with two purchases. So we'll get that done. I hired a chief operating officer 6 months ago. He has made, I can't even explain to you, a tremendous difference. We just hired a new chief financial officer this week from a company, Deep Local. It was a startup in Pittsburgh. He was there 7 years. He has 25 years experience. So like we're building a heck of a team right now that will position us to really get to the next level. And there are levels to the game for sure. We have basically 700 units under management is a lot different than 100 units, and 100 units is a lot different than, you know, 5 to 10. So we've had to reinvent ourselves. You know, last year was a big growth year for us, and we, you know, what got you here won't get you there kind of thing.
Yep.
You know, we had to, we've replaced a lot of the company, not, you know, that wasn't the stated intent, but it just kind of worked out that way. We implemented EOS, which is the entrepreneur operating system, which focuses on accountability. Not everyone is built for accountability and growth at the same time. We've broken our processes a lot with the growth for sure. So But we're on the right track. And like I said, we've broken records the last 2 months. So I'm excited about 2024 for sure.
This is sort of a selfish question because I started a company in Pittsburgh and I started a few that just failed miserably. But when I started to focus on online business transactions, that's whenever my business started to skyrocket. And it's maybe because the culture here in Pittsburgh is very blue collar, and maybe it just has a certain, I don't know, culture to it that is different than what you see in Texas or Florida or Ohio. So in your experience, what was it like building a business in Pittsburgh? You're in the circles with other people who are building in Ohio and Texas and in Florida and even the Carolinas. I just think it's different there. It just seems like there's a little bit more activity. It's a little easier to get off the ground. Pittsburgh seems to be a very hard place, in my opinion. So was it like that for you? And what have you seen as compared to other cities?
I don't think of it that way. I can only market to people that live in Pittsburgh because we offer rentals, right? That's the main crux of what we do. So it kind of is what it is, and you just got to deal with it. I will say there's a big difference between Allegheny and Beaver counties.
Yeah. How about that? Just that little shift.
Yeah. Back to your first question, growth in the southern states is ridiculous. And I've always been taught not to buy for appreciation, but you're crazy not to chase appreciation down in the South. Like, it's going to happen. Dallas, yep. You can be on anywhere in the outskirts of Dallas. It's going to grow into you. Same thing with Florida. Same thing with other states down there. You don't have that in Pittsburgh. Like, you do make your money on the buy. And we've had great appreciation. I've had properties from what I purchased them for 10 years ago, triple in value. And a lot of that's through operations and getting them done right. But also the market has been double-digit appreciation in Pittsburgh, which we've never, I don't want to say never, but we haven't seen in a long time because we've been losing population for 50 years. So Pittsburgh's different. It's a lot more stable. And the good of that is you don't have the big dips like you do in the other cities. You know, Phoenix grew like crazy and boom, crashed. Florida grew like crazy and then crashed. You're not going to have a crash in Pittsburgh. We're a very stable. So I love that. And that tells me, that gives me the confidence that I can go into one of these growth markets. And as long as I get a good buy on a big deal, like, the growth is going to basically make our investment a smart one, right? But you got to buy right for sure. But yes, those growth markets, I'm a little jealous of that. But also there is some downside risk to that. Like, there is not here. The people, I think it's hard to hire everywhere. I don't know of any markets where it's easy to hire right now. Right. I'll say that.
Man, you touched on something there that when I bought my first property in 2008, 2009, everybody kept saying, well, we're in Pittsburgh. It's not going to hurt us too much, right? All the shit was hitting the fan in 2008, 2009, and it really didn't affect us too much. So I was able to buy my property and I didn't notice any difference. Obviously, I wasn't too aware, but you're right about that. So I think what you're saying is that you might have to be a little bit more diligent with what you buy, a little bit more, I guess, strict with the numbers. And I think that makes you a better investor. It's just what I've seen. So,
yeah. In Pittsburgh, I always tell people, plan for 3% appreciation. And if you get 10, great. But, you cannot buy something that does not cash flow today and think you're going to make 20% in Pittsburgh. You might, but if you're counting on that, you're in the wrong market for sure.
And you do not discriminate against asset classes, RV parks. Man, I love mobile home parks and RV parks. What made you want to get into that? And obviously, you're diversifying your portfolio, but there's a shit ton of opportunity that's out there. And that might be an untapped market in certain areas. So what'd you say about that?
The biggest reason, first of all, it's a great asset class. You don't have the maintenance that you do on a big apartment complex. And this is a big one. It's going to be a $10, $11 million RV park at the end of the day. It's a luxury RV park. With walking trails, turf backyards, 6-foot privacy fences, like, it's going to be pretty, pretty nice. I'm excited to see it come out of the ground. But the biggest reason that I went into this was the operators. And that goes back to what I was talking about before. I'm looking for operators that have high degrees of integrity. And I'm in this with the Crimmins, Julie and Nick Crimmins down in Texas. Shout out to you guys. But they're just beautiful people to work with. And this project, like a lot of them, has faced some adversity with lenders tightening up and stuff like that. And in the tough times, you see who people really are. And these people have hearts of gold. So I would go to war with them any single day. But that's the main reason I got into this. I am not an expert in RV parks. I help them raise the money. I help them put together, you know, some pitch deck materials and stuff like that. And, you know, a little bit on the property management side, we add some value, but ultimately they're the horse that I'm hooking my buggy up to this time.
Guys, his book has all kinds of information. This is not fluff. This is real deal stuff about HELOCs, finding hard money lenders, private lenders, the Burr method, obviously, owner financing, lease options, Airbnb arbitrage. We could probably talk about that for hours, but wholesaling, self-directed IRA investors, syndications, and I guess even when it comes to mindset, unlocking your potential. So yeah, pick up his book, Keys to the Vault, on Amazon, bestseller, multiple categories. Is there a website that you would like to push people to if they have questions about maybe some, whether it's coaching or investment strategies or anything that you offer?
Yeah. The main website for my personal brand and where you can find the book and everything is www.412ah.com. That's the easiest one. And there is a link to the book on there. There's a way to get a hold of me if you do want to talk about coaching or investing and stuff like that. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
And guys, he was one of the first affiliates when we launched our affiliate program to take the affiliate link and put it down at the bottom. So if you check out Dream Starters Publishing, go through his website at the bottom of it.
Do it.
Okay. And that way we're able to track if you listened or watched this podcast or just went to his website. Last question I have for you. What is one book outside of your book that changed your life? I always bring up Rich Dad Poor Dad as one that put me on this path and really did set me free. So is there a book like that in your life?
Well, that was the one that got me on the investing for sure.
Of course.
The one that changed my life was when I read in college, and this is probably not going to resonate with a lot of people, but Ayn Rand, Anthem, which is a 100-page book. It's well worth reading. And I grew up very liberal, just being in the inner city. I grew up in the inner city. The house I grew up in is now boarded up, and it's a crappy street. And a lot of people tell me, why wouldn't you buy it and turn it up? You don't want anything on this street. But Ayn Rand, Anthem, just said it in a way, and it's a philosophy book to a degree, but it's fictional. And it talks about how everyone's equal, like everyone's name is equality or, you know, justice and things like that. And the word I is not allowed. Like it's almost corporal punishment. And that was also around the time where I got my first job out of college. And once you start making your money and paying taxes, you understand things a little bit differently. So Ayn Rand, and then that also led me into Atlas Shrugged, which is 1,000 pages, which I'm not a reader. So that took me like a year to read. But Ayn Rand pretty much changed my mindset quite a bit. That got me on the path to being the best that I could.
Wow. What age were you when you read that book?
I think 20 or 21.
Yeah.
21 maybe.
That was 21, 22, somewhere in there. So yeah, it's that time. You're right. I grew up, I wouldn't say I was liberal, but I was just unknowing of what the world really was all about. And so books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Think and Grow Rich and all that set me free mentally. And
I used to rail against the rich all the time, man. Even in college, there was a chick I used to argue with. And I, you know, it's funny. The one comment I have, and I'm not going to get political, but is if you believe one party on every single subject, you are brainwashed. And I've been brainwashed on the liberal side. I've been brainwashed on the conservative side. Do not fill your head with that stuff, man. Just at the end of the day, we're all playing on the same game board. This is the game. These are the rules. Figure out the rules and go make the best life you can for you and your family.
Awesome. Yeah, great point there. 2003, 2004, I was a freshman in college. I remember hating Trump because he was rich. Oh, he's born rich, all that. Mm-hmm. And you know, you start to slowly wake up. You're like, all right, wait, how do I become rich? And then you start thinking in a certain way. And then you're like, wait a second, I was brainwashed to think that wealth was bad. And I'm with you on that. You start to slowly wake up, and now you could see people who are brainwashed, and you're like, what the hell? Here, read this book, you'll be free. It's all.
Listen, man, it takes a lot more than that. And I remember being in high school, and if you acted smart, like, you got made fun of. We would make fun of kids that acted smart. I was not a great kid growing up, you know what I mean? But I just saw a meme literally this week where it's a kid in a pool and the water around him's all clear, but there's people around him that are surrounded, like, in yellow pee, essentially. And they're all pointing at him and laughing at him. And he's the only one in clear water. You know what I mean? But it's that mob rule where they think that, you know, the way they live is the right way. And they're making fun of the person that's actually has not peed the pool. And it's just a metaphor of that's how growing up in the inner city was. Like, if you did anything to basically break that cycle, you were made fun of, for sure. And it's sad. And it's, you know, I've tried to go back to my high school and go speak to them. And I, you know, there's the mindset and the, yep. And that's not a reason I'll get into right now, but it was very disappointing. I'll tell you that. But the mindset in the inner city is tough. So it takes a lot to break that cycle. You do have to fill your brain. It's like a diet, right? What are you filling your brain with from the books that you read? What podcasts are you listening? What YouTube channels are you watching? That will tell your future.
Great point. Reminds me of the meme of there's a bird cage with a bunch of birds in the cage, and then there's one flying around, and the birds that are in the bird cage are like, look at that fool flying around.
Yeah.
Doesn't he know how dangerous that is?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So guys, get the right books and you'll be set free. Obviously, get around the right people and start taking action. You'll start to know more about the world and yourself. Keys to the Vault is the book. It's on Amazon, bestseller. And Dan Costantino, I can sign off on him. Damn good guy, family guy. So get in touch with him. Dan, thanks so much for being here, man.
Mike, thank you, brother. Appreciate all your help on the book.
All right, no problem. Remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.